Johnson did it after the Meredith incident at Ole Miss.
Let me rephrase it. Generally, though, the so-called establishment candidate wins.
Well, no.
No?
I disagree with. A front runner has not gotten elected in Mississippi in the last 20 years.
Wasn't John Bell a front runner?
No. He got into the campaign late. The front runner at that time was a fellow named Carroll Garden, who was serving as lieutenant governor. He died in early December of 1966. The man who was serving as state treasurer then, William Winter, jumped into the campaign after Carroll died. William pretty well pulled in most of Garden's visible support. The campaign, it looked like it was going to narrow down before Garden died, to a rehash of a 1959 campaign between Carroll Garden and Ross Barnett. When Carroll died, William Winter jumped into it. He came in January. John Bell didn't get into it until March. Kind of late getting into it. John Bell had a lot going for him.
I guess what I meant to say was that most of them have been in governmental positions, statewide offices or something except Waller.
Yes.
Waller now is atypical.
That's right.
He comes out of nowhere.
Right.
He proved that you can come out of nowhere.
You're right. They have come from the so-called establishment. Yes.
That's what I meant.
Yes.
That's what I meant.
I misunderstood your question.
I didn't mean the business establishment. I meant people in the political
Mississippi,
party of the government.
The establishment in Mississippi is really a business, agriculture, and political coalition in this state. Labor's always pretty well been on the outside of the establishment, although I can see labor moving on even closer now. Labor's been on the outside. In some states, some of your real...
What is happening with labor politically?
In Mississippi, labor is split. They're split just like any other segment of our state, groupings, political groupings, if you want to call them as such. Labor in Mississippi went through a pretty tough time on the racial issue. They were split on that pretty good in Mississippi. Some of your strongest Klan support, when the Klan was about to get started again in the state, came right out of organized labor, out of union. The two areas where we had the most trouble were in the Natchez area, Southwest Mississippi, and around Laurel, Mississippi, were two of the areas we had our biggest problems. And in both of those areas, they're two of the strongest union areas we have in the state. Down on the coast, in contrast, down there in the Pascagoula area, is your biggest labor area. I don't think the racial issue ever became a problem with them.
But are they getting more and more important in terms of statewide politics?
They haven't gotten... Labor, yes. Organized labor, no. We've got more people in Mississippi today deriving their primary source of income from construction work than we have from the farm. But we still have those people in manufacturing. The manufacturing is way above agriculture now. But those people who work in the factories still, a lot of them think more in terms of agriculture than they do in terms of being a manufacturing.
Yeah, we were astounded to find out that 7% of the state's income comes from agriculture, and that's all.
I would think of the income.
Isn't that right, Jim?
No, 7% of the labor force. I think you'll find
the
a little
labor
more.
Force? Yeah.
A little more of the income does. I think
the income is
on up around 12, a little more, but only about between 7-8% of the labor force comes from agriculture,
That was interesting, because 50% are still rural.
But, you know, a lot of these people that work in these small factories around the state, they're first-generation factory workers. They grew up on the farm, and they still have a lot of the beliefs and sentiments of their parents, and a lot of them still have a few cows, and they'll have a patch of turnip greens and a field of corn, you know, and these things. And although their income is coming from the factory, their sentiments are still there with the land. Now, I think when you start getting your second, third, and fourth generation, factory work is going to be different. And that's going to be coming down the road soon.
You going to be a candidate for governor?
I don't know. I'm going to run for either governor or lieutenant governor. I'm not sure which. I don't plan to. plan to make up my mind until December or January.
If you do, what would be your platform? Or doesn't one need a platform?
You know, platforms in Mississippi is something you got to have, but you don't need, but the absence of one would hurt you.
No, I mean, in terms of, you know, why should you be lieutenant governor or governor? When they ask you that question, what's the response to that?
Well, this would not be a campaign platform, certainly. But if you would ask me the question, why should be, I think I've had more experience or as much as most folks around. I would be, my platform would be geared probably primarily to economic growth and progress, doing those things necessary to promote economic progress. And then, too, I've been a pretty strong supporter of education, all phases of education, all along. I would continue that support. We still have got to pour more money.
How would you deal with the public-private school issue? I mean, how does one deal with that politically? That's my question.
Well, the way I do it is, I think it's for each parent to decide where his child ought to go to school. But we've got to have public education. We've got to support public education as strong as possible for those who can't send their children to private school. I send my children to private school. But the private school they go to is integrated. But it's a good school. I send it to the school, send my kids. I've got a little children of mine. I have three boys, 8, 6, and 1 year old. So, and the reason that we started sending them to this school is because in Jackson, had I put my boys in public school when my first boy came along to go to school, he would have gone to either 7 or 8 different schools around this town. From the 1st through 12th grade. Never would have been at any school long to really identify with the school and have the pride of his school that I wanted him to have, that I had when I grew up in a rural town in Mississippi. I had a lot of pride in my little public school that I grew up in. I think it's for each parent to decide. But I think we've got to continue upgrading public education.
What about state support for private schools?
I would support it, but there's no, you can't do it. You're fooling people when you tell them there's any way to do it. I would have no hesitation. For instance, I think that the Colts were absolutely wrong in not allowing us to furnish textbooks to private schools. Our state has furnished textbooks historically to the school children. We've been, from the time we first had free textbooks in our state, passed in the early 40s. We didn't have free textbooks until about 1941-42 in Mississippi. But we gave them.
Who was governor then?
Paul Johnson Sr.
Remember? Governor Johnson's told about that.
That was one of the finest things. Old man Paul Johnson did some fine things for the state. Paul did some fine things. But at that time, hell, he didn't distinguish between kids going to parochial school. We had parochial schools in the state back then. Those free textbooks went right to those kids, as well as the ones in public school. But we can't do it, you know.
And you said that the school your kids go to is integrated. To what extent, I mean, are they? How many blacks in the school, do you know?
Oh, percentage-wise, I don't know. It's a small number. But the school has no racial policies. Kids attested. St. Andrew's Episcopal School is where my kids go. It's an old school, been a day school here in Jackson for a number of years. It's not one of the schools that came along after the integration deal. And they just look at the kids, you know. I know in my kids and all their classes, and I've had my kids there in preschool, you know, along too. They all have blacks in the classes. I think a number of the professors out at Tougaloo send their children to St. Andrew's. I know my little boy went to a birthday party recently at the playground over close to where I live. And he's a classmate. And his parents teach at Tougaloo. He's a little black boy. It's not but it's basically white.
One of the things that intrigues us, and we ask everybody this.
But I want my children to get a good education. Public schools are fucked up, to use my crudeness, in this city. They're getting a little better. For instance, my maid, Black, she's gotten in problems before, and I've gotten out of problems. She's been with my family since we've lived here, before any of my children were born. Our maid's like a member of my family. She and her sister live next door to each other. Each of them have two girls. The range at that time when we had our first decree in this city, reshuffling everything, they ranged in age, I think, from 8 to 12, four girls. They'd all been going to the same school. Our maid took them in the morning, and our sister picked them up in the afternoon. Hell, they ended up going to four different schools. My maid came to me wanting to get the children back into school. Hell, I told her I couldn't do it. She damn near quit me. She couldn't understand why I couldn't get her children back into school, because it was a real inconvenience for them. But I can see, in talking to Blacks, I can see that now that they've proved that you can't keep them from going, somewhere down the road, where that point will be, I don't know. I think they're going to be amenable to getting back to a neighborhood concept. I think the pressure's going to come from their own people to do it.
What long-range effect is that going to have if you do that and then the schools revert to being basically segregated to a large extent?
Well, I don't think there will, you see, in the interim, in the few years, the neighborhood patterns in the city of Jackson have changed considerably. You've got a lot more Blacks living in what used to be so-called white neighborhoods. The residential patterns have changed appreciably, and I see more and more change.
Are these becoming integrated neighborhoods, or Blacks just moving in to form their white neighborhoods?
Well, you've had both, but we've got integrated neighborhoods. We've got some of our real elite residential sections now are getting Blacks who move in, because they have the same economic level of these people. And I'm seeing them accept them pretty well. I don't feel the threat of property values diminishing with a Black moving in the neighborhood the way it was felt 10 years ago. I don't know, it's not that big a deal anymore down here.
Thinking back 10 years ago, Ross Barnett's administration and Johnson's, and you were involved.
Oh, that was colorful. Ross was.
Could you have predicted then that you'd have that kind of massive integration?
Hell no. No.
Why do you think it occurred so peacefully, apparently with some, pretty well adjusted?
I really thought this state would be in flames. And I was real proud of the way our people accepted it. For one thing, I was a segregationist. But I can remember as a kid some things we did in Blacks, I say we whites, that I couldn't stomach. They were wrong on the face of it. I knew it. I wouldn't tell anybody else, but hell, I knew it. I told myself.
What would be the sort of thing?
Double standards of justice. That was the thing that bothered me. Really bothered me.
Any incident that comes to mind on that?
I saw a Black whipped. He ran a log truck in my town, in a ditch, put it in a big ditch, and evidently bent the front of the axle. I saw the man who owned the truck, a white man, one Saturday night, late Saturday afternoon, whip him with a chain that he pulled off of that truck. I guess I was 6, 7 years, 8, 9 years old. Never forgot it. I can picture it right today. Blood coming out of that Black's head. That made me, after seeing it, made me think of a lot of other things that I came along. then too, I think our blacks, as they get more educated, are going to make more significant contributions to our society. The black vote has made a big difference. You got to go ask that black by Joyce for something now. You're not only giving in all the time. You're only asking him to. You got something by Joyce. You got to ask him for.
Yeah, but nobody thought in the late 60s that that could be accomplished in 70. Except now everybody looks back and says, we can't believe it.
Right. I think,
did everybody misread?
I think basically it goes back to our people are basically law-abiding people. And I think it's the same thing I talked about a while ago. I think several things happened in this state that were repulsive to people. Burning of black churches. That turned a lot of people. When it appeared that the Klan was about to raise its head again. 1964, the state legislature, we gave Paul Johnson the governor. We gave the Highway Patrol general police powers. And you know the reason we did it? Was to be used against the Klan. So the Klan couldn't get re-entrenched. It was, you know, looked like it was about to. Then we had, the killings over in Philadelphia. Three kids. On the surface, people were saying, hell, it didn't have business being down here. Inside, people didn't like it. Killing them. And that was very distasteful to people in Mississippi. Hurt a lot of people inside.
What was the effect of the disruption at Ole Miss?
Oh, that proved that you can't whip City Hall. That had an effect. That proved that some of the old legalistic cliches we'd used in the state, such as that we had states' rights and what's the old deal that Calhoun and espoused back a number of years ago, in a position, you know, we thought that the state could impose its sovereignty between the federal government and its people. You know, John C. Calhoun's old theory. Those things, that proved it, hell, that the...
that was taken all very seriously at that time.
The State Sovereignty Commission and all that?
But wasn't that was really taken very seriously at that time, when they believed it.
Oh, man, it was serious as a devil. Yeah. Well, when it came to the point, I know, hell, I was riding with old Ross on his bandwagon. The thing that turned me is when we had a meeting in his office, I was a young member of the Mississippi House of Representatives. He called us in a special session. He called a group of us into his office one night. Well, the thing that turned me was that afternoon. I'd been with three members of the House went with him to Oxford when he got there too late to prevent Mary from getting in, and Paul Johnson stood at the gate and prevented Mary from coming in. But when Ross Barnett told his security people that any federal marshals, any federal folks tried to arrest him, he wanted them to resist. And I'll never forget it. Colonel Birdsong, head of the Highway Patrol at that time, says, we were in the bedroom of the biggest suite, the alumni house at Ole Miss. The three legislators, the governor, Paul Johnson, the lieutenant governor, we'd gone into the bedroom, closed the door with the security people, the Highway Patrol. Colonel Birdsong says, well now, governor, what if they use force? He says, you use force to resist. He said, what if they start shooting? He said, you shoot back. Gwen Cole, he turned to Gwen Cole, who was, of course, another member of the Highway Patrol investigator, who was in charge of the group who was guarding the Lieutenant Governor Paul Johnson. He said, now, Gwen, that goes for you, too. Gwen went through the same series of questions. I wanted to make sure he got it right. And I thought to myself, my God, are we going to, as Americans, start shooting against other Americans? When we got back to Jackson, he called a meeting that night in his office. And he wanted to reactivate the State Guard. Passed legislation creating the State Guard. And some will start asking questions. Well, Governor, what are they going to do? He says, well, we're going to have them. I said, well, you mean to fight? You know, and these things started, this kind of talk. I started making people think. Hell, we didn't want to go to war. Anybody thought didn't want to go to war with the United States. Made me think. And I know a lot of other people made think. Then to the quality of education we had for blacks, poor, which been, I'm putting figures out of the air now, these are not accurate, but just to give you examples. For Ole Miss, Mississippi State, Mississippi Southern, MSCW, Delta State, our white four-year colleges, with state would spend $300 per pupil per year. Alcorn, A&M, Jackson State, Mississippi Valley College, our three black four-year school, state support school, where we give $300 per pupil. We give $30 per pupil for the black. And that's come back to haunt us in our public schools, because the quality of their teachers, the black teachers, is what's hurting us now. But they just didn't get the basic education.
But you were personally surprised by the rapidity of all that change that occurred and the adjustment to it?
Well, no.
You said the state you thought would be in flames.
No, no.
Everybody.
I was not surprised as it occurred. But if at the front end, back in 1960, you asked me what I had thought, you know, that it would, back at, on that front end, if you were had told me in 1974 you're going to have all these changes, I would have told you whether the state would have been in flames done it. It didn't happen. But one thing, you know, time's moving a lot faster. My God. Things that used to, when you read history, you read the account of the 1910 to 1920, even though there's a world war, you know, things, we'll say 1910 to 1930. Hell, we make more advances in 1 year now than we did in 20 then.
Going back to that Ole Miss thing and that situation where Barnett wanted to bring out the guard and so forth and in effect plan.
Well, he wanted to activate the state militia, which is every state has a
right.
Active state
I understand
militia,
that.
Right?
But
well,
not the National Guard, but the state militia.
Well, everybody prior to World War II, if you remember, we didn't have the National Guard as we have it now. We had each state had the state guard that could become nationalized in case of national emergencies, and was used by states when they had state emergencies. Most of them even had wooden guns that they marched with. But they were state guard. But after World War II, it never reverted back to state guard. It continued nationalized as a national guard. And what he wanted to do was recreate the state guard, enact legislation that we'd still have the National Guard in the state. But we would be creating a state militia, as you say.
Yeah. Would it be the same people, was he talking
no.
about?
No. Oh, no.
Separate people.
I don't know if it's
what happened at that meeting? That's what I was
Well,
about. I wanted to finish that.
The reason prevailed. As Representative George Payne Cossack got up and said, Governor, if we do that, and this is before they had moved into Oxford. We're still trying to prevent Mary from going to school. George Payne Cossack got him and said, well, Governor, it seems to me that that'd be like waving a red flag at a bull. If you want the United States government to come in here with arms, that's a good way to get them to do it.
Plus, and couldn't the federal government federalize the National Guard and you'd have your own National Guard fighting our state guard?
Hell yes. That was brought up by the speaker then, Walter Suss. He said, Governor, if you plan to arm all these people, don't you realize that all the arms in our state are controlled by the National Guard. It's owned by the central government. And the further it went, the more ridiculous it got.
Did this occur before or after that meeting in the hotel room with Birdsong?
This, I believe, was the night after the meeting
at the
Ole Miss hotel.
So what was just the feeling in the legislature? Did the governor just hadn't thought things through? Is that gracious way of saying it?
I don't think Ross Barnett ever wanted to go to war. I really don't. People were throwing things at him, and he was I think he just threw it out. You know, somebody run and said, we ought to have a state guard. He called in a bunch of legislative leaders. Why I was along, I don't know. I was just a freshman. And he threw in, you know, about the state guard. Most people probably don't remember as much as I do. But as I said, to me, those two events happening in one day, about shooting back and then the state guard, left a deep imprint in my mind.
What did it mean to you?
It meant that, hell, by God, we're about to go to war with other Americans. Scared the hell out of me. It frightened me.
And so how did you feel then? I mean, what
was it frightened to be, me.
So what was, you know, what did you want to do then?
What did I want to do? I wanted to go back to my hotel room and forget the whole damn thing. That's what I did. I no longer went with Ross anywhere. I no longer sat there and listened to him talk to Bobby Kennedy over the telephone, as I'd been doing for several days.
Were you there with the great chicken story quote?
No, I read it, you know, in Frank Sorensen's book. I tell you, I'm I kind of got a unique deal. The only presidential candidate I've ever actively supported was Jack Kennedy. Hell, I spoke for him all over North Mississippi. I still think he's a fine man. I think he's a good president. I disagree with a lot of things. And I certainly would not want to put in the book that I campaigned for him, because that would become an issue probably in my next campaign, although I don't deny the fact. I thought he brought some leadership to the country.
What do you think would have to happen for the Democratic Party to carry Mississippi again in a presidential election?
For the National Party to get back the way it used to be, where it had a big tent. They didn't narrow the philosophy so much. You know, the Democratic Party, basically in the past, if you believed that this country was founded on the premise that no child should go to bed at night without food, no people should go to bed at night without shelter, those who can't help themselves can best be helped by government. We owe an obligation in this society to help those who can't help themselves. That was the basic philosophy of the Democratic Party that most everybody believed in. You could disagree on integration and segregation. You could disagree on foreign aid. You could disagree on the war here or there. But the party, the last party convention, that was too much. You had to be against the war in Vietnam. You had to be strong for human rights. To the extent that you were opposed to property rights. I think when the tent gets bigger again, I think that we'll be able to, and the party starts nominating people who are more moderate. As long as you nominate people like McGovern, and the party's vowed to some of the causes it did the last convention, you're not going to get the people in this state back in the party.
We hear a lot of people mention Jackson if we ask about names. Are you, any other names come to mind?
The shame of it is, probably the man who could get Mississippi back in the Democratic Party better than anybody else has left the party, John Connally. I think Ted Kennedy would make votes in the South. I don't think he'll make too many votes in Mississippi. Still goes back to this Meredith thing, you know.
Why do you think, what do you see as the basis of his appeal in the South?
Well, for one thing, you've had a change in the vote of the South. Young people today, black or white, aren't thinking along the same lines that we thought of when I was coming along, going to college in the 50s. Kids today are not, the old black and white bit has no meaning to them, most of them anymore. The scars that Kennedy had over the Meredith incident, for instance, the Freedom Riders coming through, the image that Kennedy's had in the South, you know, pushing integration, that's not going to be a minus in the minds of a lot of these young voters. Got a lot of black voters now. Didn't have before. And then the Republicans. I can't see any real good leaders in, like, you know, too much in the Democratic Party, real leaders. But hell, I think the Republicans are worse shape than we Democrats. I would like to see them, both parties, going back to the state houses. I think it's going to be difficult to do, though, because of television, the exposure that members of the Senate get on television. Re-exposure they get, name identification.